Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 8, The Four Temperaments, Part 4. In his book, The Recovery of Man in Childhood, the Waldorf teacher A.C. Harwood wrote about the temperaments. Now, this is a major book, one of the very first in the English language about Waldorf education, written, I believe, in the 1930s, and probably revised since then. A very, very good book, which you should definitely read and can still to this day be recommended to parents. I'm mentioning it because in this book, Harwood says that, of course, there are four temperaments. They constitute 100% of the children in the class, but we shouldn't believe that there's an even distribution, 25% to each temperament. And he points out that because sanguinity is the temperament inherent to childhood, in the same way that we could say melancholia is the temperament inherent in old age, with perhaps phlegma, middle age, and choleric, the temperament that everybody is a bit imbued with in the prime of their life, in their most productive years. So, okay, sanguinity, no question about it, connected with childhood. All children have a sanguine coloring. Says that it should not surprise us then that there's a higher percentage of sanguines than the other temperaments, and the other temperaments then are more evenly distributed in the lesser percentages than 25%. And I am sure that Harwood wrote this from his experience of his own class, other classes he had observed, from conversations with the small but nonetheless very industrious and fine group of teachers that were teaching in the United Kingdom at that time. But I would beg to differ and say that in our time, in the 21st century, that if there's any temperament that we see in a much larger percentage, let's say 30% or even 35% in a given classroom, today that would be the melancholic temperament, which I just said is a temperament inherent in old age. And if we can understand this a little bit, and I'm asking you, not just to accept what I'm saying, but put it to the test of your own observation when you work with your first graders, or even talk to kindergarten teachers about the temperaments that they're observing, which, as I said, are not yet the child's true temperament, but something of a foundation for that true temperament, I think that we would have to say that there is a kind of old age quality that is stronger in today's classroom than before, a more wakeful quality, a quality of perhaps a little bit of pessimism, living a bit under a cloud, that we see this in more children, that, for example, the imitative quality, which is connected with sanguinity as well as with the consciousness of the young child, that is weaker, far weaker than it used to be in many, if not all, children. And the ability to simply play, to know how to play by oneself, to keep oneself company without needing a play date, and the ability then to play socially with others. These are capacities that growing numbers of children do not have. And the melancholic, again, is a child who generally needs to learn to play and who needs to learn to socialize with others. So this is something to look at. It may be helpful in answering many of the riddles that we have about today's child. Are there more melancholics coming? And is this a bad thing, a good thing? Well, for a moment, let's look at what the melancholics can be transformed into as we get older. So let's look at the melancholic first, and we can say that Steiner indicates melancholia, which can result in a kind of exaggerated interest in oneself, an exaggerated penetration of one's body, feeling every ache and pain, and fearing anything that's kind of impinging on us, that this eventually, and education is part of this process, as well as life itself, can be transformed into the capacity for compassion. That a melancholic who can be quite hypochondriacal can later on grow up to be an individual imbued with healing forces. One whose melancholia, whose correct sense that there is a lot of suffering in the world, can be turned towards the suffering of others and serve in a healing way. And we probably would find, were we to go to a refugee camp somewhere in an embattled war zone, or follow members of Doctors Without Borders around, we would probably find a large percentage of individuals there who are melancholic, or who certainly were when they were children, and who have found a way to take that melancholia and make it, instead of deeply introspective, make it something which rays out of themselves towards others. So, why are there more melancholics in today's classroom? It's possible, I would imagine, that more melancholics are incarnating now, that the spiritual world is sending more of these children our way because they are needed for the times to come, where healing forces, compassion, will certainly be a necessary part of modern life. And it is interesting that along with the inflowing of melancholics, which I think has been in progress since the end of the 20th century and into the 21st, we also find the growth of Buddhism in America, with its stress on compassion and with simplifying one's own life and really trying to turn one's attention to the needs, the sufferings, the sorrows of others. So it could be that when you come to grade 5, which is usually when, as part of ancient cultures, the life of Buddha is taught, that you may want to spend more time on that figure, on that life, and on his teachings than would have been the case 20 or 30 years ago. The phlegmatic child, the phlegmatic temperament, has the possibility of being transformed in later years into a capacity for hard, solid, steady work, which can be physical work. It can be, here's an individual who's willing to accept the drudgery, which is certainly part of modern life, not always perhaps on the physical level anymore for many of us, but in terms of entering a lot of data, let's say, or having to make repetitive phone calls or whatever our tasks may be today, that phlegmatics with the potential for great patience and steady application, and with a lack of antipathy towards doing the same thing again and again. In fact, in many ways, a love of doing the same thing again and again and coming to mastery of it. We also see phlegmatics among the great scholars, individuals, philosophers or historians, let's say, who who are able to work and work and work on a series of ideas, developing them, unfolding them steadily for years and years, perhaps, before even putting out their first volume, or a Gibbons, the author of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, who wrote page after page after page of the minute detail, which to this day makes his book a valuable source material, even for modern historians. So there we have the phlegmatic, who is able to make that very special contribution to the world. And also with this come qualities of kindness and a sense of wanting to make the world comfortable, pleasant, cozy for others. Not quite the powerful, at times sacrificial forces of compassion that live in the melancholic, but certainly those individuals who provide our culture with important qualities. Charles Dickens's novels rarely lack a strong phlegmatic figure who's trying to make everything well for others. The sanguine, here we have the possibility of metamorphosis into the poet, the artist, the composer, also the individual who is able to organize things that are joyful. Sanguines, in their scatteredness, have the seeds of incredible organization, but it's got to be artistic organization with lots of color tabs and lots of different notebooks or lots of different apps on a mobile device or whatever, that they can really move from one to the other. And they're individuals who can truly multitask, which at least a few years ago was considered the ultimate attainment for the modern person in the digital age. I think questions have arisen about whether that really is the best thing to be doing, especially when you're driving. But the sanguine is one who, like an ancient Indian god or goddess, may be many-armed, holding many things in those hands, and able to bring them into a kind of balance and a harmony. They can also be the gossip columnists. They can be the sort of, endless partying individual. Those things can certainly arise as well. As I mentioned, the sanguine temperament has a degree of instability about it because of this water and air mixture, but a very important force in our time as well, the bringer of beauty. And then the choleric. I think there we all realize something that Goethe once said, which I find myself citing on many occasions. He said, "We honor the girl for what she is and the boy for what he will become." And I think we could say that we honor the choleric for what he or she will become, especially. And what will they become? The possibility is there of leadership, of a visionary, of an individual who can bring a profound and lasting change into an organization, a community, a nation, the world. In fact, Steiner has gone so far as to say that every great religion, every great change in human culture from one age to another, great consciousness change, was caused by, manifested by, orchestrated by cholerics, that their importance is earth-changing and transformative. So, of course, if you're carrying the potential for that kind of responsibility, your childhood may not be easy. It may not altogether be such an easy thing to sort of look forward to all that one will be carrying later on. And in the recklessness of the young choleric, we see the possibility of an individual who is willing to take risks, who is willing to take quantum leaps, to go where no one has tread before. These are also aspects of this choleric temperament. So just as the melancholics are there in the highest proportion, I can assure you, no matter what you've been told by your colleagues, kindergarten teachers, or others, you have a small percentage of cholerics in your class. Very unlikely that you have more than 10%. I don't recall ever seeing a class where 20% of the children, let's say it was a class of, you know, 25 children, and where there were five cholerics, or six, or seven, or something like that. It's more likely in your class you're going to have two or three true cholerics. And this is what, you know, we're really going to have to work towards, how to differentiate a true temperament from the many admixtures that come its way. So we'll go on now. Clearly, this is a theme that I think is very important for us to be living with, not just for first grade either, but really for the primary grades altogether, and for the residue of temperament that you're going to be working with in the grades beyond the primary grades as well. We'll continue in the next lecture.